Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany on this Super Tuesday that the November election might be decided today. It's going to be a very interesting day. But I've got as my guest, Jed Crasher. We're not going to talk national politics. We're going to talk about what's going on in the city of Albany. And specifically, we're going to talk about the trash free, the red light cameras, and Matthew Peter. So Jen, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Happy Super Tuesday. Mini Super Tuesday, they're calling it.
Oh, it's a mini Super Tuesday? Oh, my
God,
with Florida.
That's what they call it in the national media.
With Ohio and Florida up for grabs, it's going to be
It's going to be a fun night to watch results, that's for sure.
It sure is. I got my popcorn all ready and my seat all ready. So let's talk about what's going on in this city of Albany. And let's start off with Matthew Peter. For people who don't know who Matthew Peter is, can you explain who he is and where he's going and why you think that's important?
Yeah, of course. So Matt Peter is the outbound former chief of staff for the mayor. He also served as the mayor's campaign manager when the mayor, when then-treasurer Sheehan ran for mayor back in 2013. So that, of course, is all well and good, and what happened recently, though, is worrisome. There was a shakeup in the mayor's senior staff with both her chief of staff and her budget director. Matt left as chief of staff, and he didn't just leave. He was appointed by the Albany Parking Authority to serve as the Albany Parking Authority's executive director. And again, on face value, doesn't seem like there would be an issue there. But there actually are significant problems with the decision that the Albany Parking Authority board made in choosing Matt, the mayor's former chief of staff, to serve as their executive director. And there are many problems. The first problem is that the last two executive directors, and they make a six-figure salary, roughly in the 120-plus area. Matt's come on at around 110. So the last two executive directors were found after the Albany Parking Authority conducted a national search. The prior two executive directors were experts in municipal parking. And when you go and you look at the Albany Parking Authority's own qualifications, required qualifications for their executive director, there are very clear qualitative requirements for their executive director. For example, part of their requirements says very clearly that their executive director has to have at least 10 years of successful management in municipal parking systems. And while Matt has a specific skill set when it comes to politics and to some level of state and municipal finance, certainly Matt does not meet the requirement by any stretch that the Parking Authority Board set forth, and several other qualitative requirements with respect to other areas of experience with municipal parking. So the reason this all came up is because the mayor submitted for reappointment three members of the Albany Parking Authority, one of those reappointments being Kevin O'Connor, whom I have a great deal of respect for, as who's the chair of the Parking Authority board, submitted all their names for reappointment. And so this was really an opportunity to ask the chair, Mr. O'Connor, why Matt was selected. And the answers that we received when we asked Mr. O'Connor questions during a planning committee meeting we had several weeks ago were worrisome. First, we learned that the requirements that of the executive director, the qualifications, were waived for Matt. But in addition to that, the job was never publicly posted. There was no national search conducted. There wasn't even a regional search conducted. And no interviews were conducted. The only person they interviewed was the mayor's chief of staff, Matt Peter. No one else was interviewed for the position. And the problem is that this goes back to an age-old issue we have in the city of Albany, in the county of Albany, in New York State, quite frankly, with cronyism. And people deserve to have faith in every aspect of their government. People deserve to have trust in every aspect of government. That includes public authorities. And this, when you look at the fact that, again, Matt did not meet virtually any of the qualifications set forth by the Parking Authority Board to serve as executive director, when you link that with the fact that no search was conducted and no interviews were conducted, it doesn't pass the smell test. Something seems very, very wrong with that. So what I've done is I've asked Dan Herring, who is the sponsor of the resolutions that would reappoint the three members of the board, to hold off on it until we can get some legal opinion on whether or not proper civil service law and public authority law were followed in appointing Matt Peter as executive director. If they weren't followed, this has been an opportunity for the board to reconsider Matt's appointment. And again, when you're talking about somebody who was at first making $70,000 as mayor's chief of staff, to move to a position that he's very clearly unqualified for, unqualified under the own the standards set forth by the appointing authority themselves, the parking authority, that is worrisome. And it's the kind of politics, it's the kind of government that I think a lot of people were hoping ended with the conclusion of the Jennings administration and the start of the Sheehan administration. But what we're actually seeing is more of the same, and that's worrisome.
So the next controversial issue is the trash fee. What's going on with that? There was a meeting. You held the meeting or the public forum at City Hall. People are up in arms about this. What's going on?
Right. So actually, trash bills finally hit people's mailboxes this past weekend. They were supposed to be out, according to the law, the 1st of February, but nevertheless, they hit mailboxes this weekend. And already I've been getting calls from people who have not necessarily been keeping their pulse on what's been going on in the city, saying, what the heck is this bill and why am I receiving it? And I knew this would be an issue. I knew that, and we were warned time and time again by tenant advocacy groups, by landlord organizations, by residents across the city that this was going to have a disproportionate impact on renters, particularly low-income renters, and we're already seeing that. And now the bill's hit, and that worry is now just being compounded. So what I've done is I've introduced a repeal for the trash tax. The repeal, as it's written, won't have any impact on this year. There's very little I can do legislatively to stop the bills from being paid this year. So, unfortunately, folks will have to pay the bills that hit their mailboxes. So that $1.5 million that the mayor is banking on to receive from trash tax bills, that'll not be affected this year. What it does do, though, my repeal legislation, is it makes sure that the current fee structure ends at the end of this year. The initial legislation that authorized the trash tax allowed the fee structure, this very blatantly discriminatory fee structure where you're only targeting owners of 2, 3, and 4 unit buildings. It allowed it to sunset over a 3-year period. That's far too long, far, far too long. By repealing it now, having it sunset at the end of this year, it does two things. As I said, it gets rid of a fee structure that is unfair, that is unfairly onerous on, again, renters, and particularly low-income renters or mom-and-pop landlords. But more practically, it creates a needed sense of urgency to really light a fire under the mayor's office and the Solid Waste Management Committee that the mayor has set up to come up with a fairer solution for next year. Now, we may not get to an ideal solution for how we pay for waste removal in the city next year, but certainly we can do a lot better than targeting 2, 3, and 4 units, such as expanding that fee and stretching it out, that $1.5 million, to include single-unit homes, single-family homes. The current fee pays absolutely no attention to the amount of waste produced. And anecdotally, and I've heard this from many residents and other council members, when you go around and you look at kind of the spot check and you see the amount of waste produced by a single-family home and compare that to the amount of waste you see produced by a 2, 3, or 4 unit, it's varied. It's significantly varied. So you'll have situations where if you have a single-family home where you have 5, 6 people living in there, they have tremendous amounts of garbage. And then you take a 2-unit home where you have maybe 3 people living in there, the amount of waste produced doesn't come close, yet it's that 2-unit home that's going to be targeted for a fee. That's not right. So we've got to figure out a much fairer alternative, and that's what this repeal is about. People are rightfully upset about it, both landlords and renters, because this fee is being passed down to the renters. In many instances, we've already heard that from many renters throughout the city. So we've got to stop that, and we've got to, as a city, stop with this pattern. And this has really been something with the mayor's office. It's part of an overall pattern of implementing very sloppy policy, and also policy that goes against the mayor's self-proclaimed progressive values. Targeting low-income families, targeting renters, that's no way to be a progressive leader. That's certainly no way to generate sustainable economic development in the city. We already have issues with affordable housing, and this trash tax only makes that situation worse when it comes to affordable housing. So that's what that repeal is about. It's to right or wrong, and it is to force the mayor's office to come up with something much fairer in future years.
Now, before I get to the red light cameras, I've got to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
All of the colleges and all the Med College and SUNY, they're all tax exempt. From your perspective, looking at what's going on in the city, do these tax exempt properties enhance Albany, or do you think it's a burden?
Well, no, our taxes on properties are not all created equal. There's a difference between, as far as when you're talking about community impact, I think there's a significant difference between, say, SUNY Albany and the now separated from SUNY Albany, the massive complex of SUNY Nano. I think there's a difference between SUNY Nano, as far as community impact, and Albany Medical Center, as far as services provided and things of that nature. As we all know, we've heard it time and time and time again, it's a fact that nobody is ignorant of. The state shares the biggest responsibility of tax-exempt property in the city of Albany. And then, of course, we have our hospitals and our higher ed institutions, other not-for-profit organizations that make up a smaller piece of that, tax-exempt property pie. The great thing about Albany, one of the great things about Albany, is that we are a university center. We have SUNY Albany, we have St. Rose, we have these wonderful institutions of higher education that enhance our ability to attract young people, new generations into the city. Where we fall short, keeping those individuals who come to Albany to earn a degree, we struggle in keeping them here in the city of Albany. Now, that's a great benefit. That's a great benefit to have sort of these magnets for smart young people to come to a city. They serve a great benefit short-term when it comes to economic development, overall city vitality. There's a real opportunity to make use of our higher ed institutions to expand our population and to attract, as I said, young people into the city. However, when you take an institution like SUNY Nano that is expanding, it seems, every day, sure, they're attracting students, but the problem is that there is, and we know this from articles in the Business Review and the Times Union, that there is commercial activity going on at these various nano-owned facilities. And they're hiding under their tax-exempt status as a university. That's a problem. These are massive. You take the facility up on Washington Avenue Extension, for example. These are massive facilities that the Albany Fire Department is responsible for. In the event, God forbid, there's an emergency situation, they're responsible for any medical emergencies that take place. There are significant burdens on our infrastructure when it comes to our water system, our sewage system. And yet Nano has done very, very little to spur economic development in the city of Albany. The people that work there, the vast majority of them, come into Albany. They use our roads. They work in their various capacities at the Nano facility, and then they leave to go back to the suburbs. They're not attracting, and they're not doing enough. Nano is not doing enough to, for example, hire people that live in the city of Albany. So I think when we talk about not-for-profit institutions, you know, we have to look at each one on sort of a case-by-case basis. And there are some that are a tremendous benefit to the city of Albany. And I don't think anybody is arguing that we should just end tax-exempt status, period, across the board for everybody. Not at all. It's a matter of what an individual entity, a tax-exempt entity, the impact that they're having on a city, and whether or not that tax-exempt status is fair. When you're talking about Nano, for example, that's not fair. When you're talking about New York State, the fact that they own a huge swath of the tax-exempt property, and they continue to tell the city of Albany, no, we're not going to give you additional funding to cover those expenses, that's problematic.
Now, the last issue for the day is the red light cameras. Have they been successful?
Well, as with anything in government, it depends on your definition of success. It's unclear, very much unclear at this point, if the red light cameras have resulted in greater traffic and pedestrian safety. Now, the mayor in 2016, budgeted $1.9 million. So this year, $1.9 million in anticipated net revenue for red light cameras. Problem with that is when you look at 2015, the mayor budgeted $2 million for net revenue from red light cameras. Now, they were late to go up. As we know, cameras are still going up, so the system is not fully implemented. However, when you do look at the fourth quarter numbers from 2015, if that's any indication of what's ahead, revenue from red light cameras is not something to be relied on. And what we saw from that fourth quarter report is all of the money, every cent, went to pay for the leasing fees for the cameras to the red light camera vendor, Datso. Now, the end result of 2015 as far as net revenue from red light cameras was zero. We received absolutely nothing from red light cameras in 2015, and we were budgeted to receive $2 million. That is quite the mistake when you talk about budgeting revenue. And what the mayor's office did for this year is subtract a mere $100,000 from the projected revenue. And again, if the fourth quarter of 2015 financial revenue figures are any indication of what's to come, then we're not going to get $1.9 million this year from red light cameras. So when you talk about success, this mayor's office has used red light cameras not as a means of public safety. That is a myth. That is something that was peddled when red light cameras, the legislation was trying to be, you know, was going through the council. This is about revenue and coming up with, again, very silly ways to try to cover shortfalls in the budget. And we've seen with this mayor's office time and time again with red light cameras and a whole host of other revenue projections that they have a really, really hard time projecting revenue accurately. So we'll have to see what happens with the first quarter report for 2016 and the subsequent reports to see if we indeed are going to get any money from these cameras. But from my perspective, there's two ways to look at it, the public safety perspective and the revenue perspective. From the public safety perspective, it is very much inconclusive whether these are really impacting in a positive way the traffic safety and pedestrian safety. Revenue, you're starting to get information now that shows that red light cameras are not successful at all, not even close from a revenue perspective.
Now, the mayor had asked for 12.5 for 5 years, and the governor said, no, it's going to be a one-shot deal. Okay, next year when there's no 12.5 million, what's going to happen then?
Well, yeah, it's going to be a very unpleasant budget, and we will have to wait and see what the mayor proposes for her 2017 budget. I think there's very little doubt that we can expect some really significant cuts to a whole host of city services. Now, with that being said, what the mayor could try to do in the budget for 2017 when it's presented is similar to what the mayor did for the 2016 budget, which is roll the dice, essentially, and insert revenue from extra revenue from the state, which is what happened with this $12.5 million. And as we do know, we will be getting it most likely. There's an important caveat there I'll get to in a second, but most likely we'll receive from the state. So what you could do in 2017 is try to do the same thing again, even though the governor seemed to have made it very clear in his amendments to the budget that this was going to be a one-time deal. There might be, in a way to kick the can down the road and to avoid a very difficult conversation about making some serious, painful decisions to our city. The mayor may insert this an extra revenue line from the state again and hope that the state bails the city out. I will say, though, my caveat about the $12.5 million is that the Senate, the New York State Senate, in their one-house budget proposal, removed the $12.5 million for Albany this year. You know, and that was one of my concerns when the mayor's office and others sort of proclaimed a victory for this year with the $12.5 million being included in the governor's amendments. It, as we all know, if you pay any attention to the state budget process, it takes three to tango. In the state, you need to have the Assembly, Senate, and Governor on board. This is a re-election year for the legislature, and the Senate Republicans, who are in control of the chamber, and this was of course speculation. I don't really have much of any communication with Senate Republicans, but certainly I would imagine they're looking at this $12.5 million to the city of Albany and saying, "Well, why is city of Albany? We've got a crisis at Hoosick Falls with their water system. We've got other issues with municipal finances and other areas of the state. Why should Albany get $12.5 million? So we need to really take a step back before proclaiming victory this year and saying we're going to get the $12.5 million, because who knows what the Senate could try to do in budget negotiations now that we know that they completely removed the $12.5 million for Albany in their one-house proposal. They may come to the negotiating table and say, no, we don't want $12.5 million for Albany. We'll agree to say $7 million for Albany, but we need to have money pumped into other areas of the state that are hurting as well. And so that's something we have to keep our eyes on. So the budget isn't over until the very end of March, and we have to see how the Senate, you know, goes through negotiations and how they use this $12.5 million for Albany as a bargaining chip in negotiations. So before we get our hopes up, let's wait and see what happens through the entirety of this budget process, because I think it's unlikely, but there is a chance that the Senate could try to stall and cut and or cut back on the aid to Albany. So that's something to keep an eye out on.
That's interesting. For those lawmakers that come to Albany who are unhappy with the governor giving us $12.5 million, well, wouldn't it be interesting if we could find offices somewhere else besides Albany for them? We're housing them. We're giving them an office. Right?
Well, we are the designated capital of New York State. There's a lot of benefit.
Right.
There is a lot of benefit to that, but no, we are the designated capital, and we have a very unique responsibility to house state government here in Albany.
Right. Okay, Jed. I really think this has been a great conversation. And
yes, absolutely.
As issues arise, I hope you'll come back on Focus on Albany to talk about what's
absolutely going
on. Thank
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. You're welcome.
You've been listening to Focus on Albany. Well, I've been talking to 11th Floor Council, Common Council Member, Jed Crasher. So if you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. And if you have a question or a comment on this show, go on Twitter, hashtag FocusOnAlbany, and share your thoughts. Jed, thank you, and everybody listening, thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.